Don't forget to check out our website at thecore.fm. And now stay tuned. More great Core Radio is on the way.
Good morning. It's Monday, November 26, 2012. It's almost 9 o'clock, about 1 minute until 8:59. My name is Mark, and you're on the starting block here on 90.3 The Core. I'm here with a very special guest, Frank. Thanks for being here this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Frank is a counselor, a recovery counselor with ADP, Counseling ADP and Psychiatric Services. He also works with the Recovery Housing Program here at Rutgers University and many more. You are a man of many talents. When I looked you up on LinkedIn, I was pretty impressed. And former service member, I believe, too, as well.
That's correct.
Well, thank you for previous service and continued service here at Rutgers campus. So I want to talk about the article that was written in the Targum. This was about back in October about the rise in opiate use on college campuses, it was particularly focused here at Rutgers. Could you just describe the state of opiate use? First of all, what it is and how it's being used now on campus, and what that and how that has maybe expanded in the last couple of years?
Yeah, the rise of opiates has been geometrical. When I first became a drug and alcohol counselor in 2004, so much of the work I was doing was in alcohol, marijuana, cocaine, and heroin. And with younger people, it was almost exclusively alcohol and marijuana. I mean, yes, you'd get people that experimented with LSD or ecstasy, but for the most part, it was the big two. And I worked at both an inpatient rehab in the inner city and a very wealthy, an outpatient rehab in a wealthy community in West Jersey. And starting in 2005, I started seeing adolescents coming in on a drug called OxyContin. And people would come in, they'd often start on Percocet or Percodan.
OxyContin is one of the painkillers that's most commonly abused. I'm actually from Ohio, and I know in the southern Ohio area that OxyContin abuse is, I think it's one of the highest regions or has one of the highest abuse rates in the country. But this is the transition then from, I guess, what people would consider lesser or weaker drugs like marijuana, alcohol abuse, and now into hard prescription drugs. Is that the trajectory that we're kind of seeing?
Yeah, and but in some ways, people just bypass marijuana and start right with opiate painkillers. And, you mentioned Ohio. Ohio's actually been decimated, and they're one of the states that came out with a pretty early prescription drug abuse plan, and there's actually great things been doing on the college level out there at Ohio State and with treatment centers, and so everyone's on board there. And out in Ohio, it's really a nonpartisan issue, which is, so you can be pleased about the is it called the Buckeye State?
Yeah,
you can be pleased about the Buckeye State.
So when you say that, do I get the sense then that this issue has become partisan in New Jersey to some extent, or is that not the case?
It's not. There's an issue that I want to talk about, I think, on the second half that's become partisan, which is extraordinarily frustrating for me.
Sure.
And that's been one of the big thing, about this fall. One of the big things I've been pushing this fall is to override the governor's veto of a law. But again, I think we'll talk about that after the break.
Sure. Well, let's focus back on Rutgers, because in the article, I think it was actually two alarming statistics that I saw from in the article. First was that the 12% rise in opiates, I'm not, just considering the substance we're talking about, I think any increase is probably alarming. Double-digit growth over the last year seems quite alarming. So I'd love to have you talk about that. And then with specific transitioning to the recovery housing program, it seems that a lot of students are getting hooked earlier. And by the time they get to college, if they don't have help getting sober or getting off of opiates, it's something like a 1 in 5 chance of recovery. So could you kind of explain a little bit about that, the rise in opiates on campus, and then talk about what prevents students who come in with drug abuse problems from getting the help or being able to get sober by themselves?
So the big thing is that, I digressed away from the first part of your question before. I'll try to stay on topic.
Okay.
People are getting introduced to these opiate painkillers, and the main drug is oxycodone. And there's also hydrocodone, which is Vicodin, but the main drug is oxycodone. And from that, we get OxyContin, Percocet, Percodan, Roxy. And people will often get introduced to them to their dentist. You know, like, so high school and college age students, they get their wisdom teeth taken out. They have root canals, and so they get Percocet or Percodan, which is like 3.5 and 5 and 7.5 milligrams. And that's really their first experience. But they may have had, some people have a sports surgery, and so they get a harder drug like Oxycontin, which could be 10, 20, 30, 40, 80 milligrams. There used to be 160, but they shut that down. And so, you know, I was never been a fan of the term gateway drug for marijuana. You know, this idea that marijuana was a gateway drug to try harder things. I disagree with that notion. But with OxyContin, it absolutely is a gateway drug. And the reason why we know that is because for about 40 years, New Jersey has been keeping track of admissions in detox programs, inpatient programs, and outpatient programs in this state. And for the first 40 years that we kept track of this data, the number one reason why someone went to detox, inpatient or outpatient, was for alcohol. In 2011, that changed, and it was opiates. And so we went from alcohol from 1970 to 2010 was the number one reason. And in 2011,
opiates. Do you think that perhaps it's in partly due to, and I'm just speculating here, and so I would love your perspective on it. Is it an over-prescription or an over-utilization? I feel I've had my wisdom teeth pulled. I've had sports surgeries, and it seems that the willingness to write a prescription for young people for such hard or such serious painkillers for young people, it seems very. And I'm no doctor, so maybe that is the only appropriate medication. So I'm not trying to make a judgment call on that, but is it the over-prescription or is it just the nature of drug use in general? Is it more of a societal issue? I shouldn't have said societal issue because that's a gateway question in itself.
If you could
pin it down to maybe one or two things that have maybe led to the increase of that.
I want to blame a whole lot of people. Yeah. But I'll try to go with four.
Sure.
I'm still irritated at the Clinton administration in 1998 for advertising approving the advertising of prescription drugs on TV. So when I was little, you didn't see ads on TV for, you know, Lipitor or Viagra or, you know, any of the other pharmaceuticals, and then that changed. So we've moved, every year we move more and more deeper and deeper into a culture that if anything's wrong with us, we take pills. So instead of, you know, healthy diet, instead of exercise, instead of doing things that are preventative, we take pills. And so so the painkiller thing, that's just a result of kind of the way our medical system works and American culture works. Doctors absolutely overprescribe. You know, they're pushed by pharmaceuticals to prescribe, and they do. The number one reason why people go to doctors now in America is for pain management. That's crazy. It's the number one reason why people go to doctors. And so they people ask for them. They push the doctors. The doctors overly prescribe. The amount of pills they get prescribed each month, it's like it's something like 60 painkillers.
60 different types of painkillers?
No, I think it's something like 60 pills per like American person. I mean, it's a ridiculous amount of like adult American, you know, per month. Wow. And so, I mean, way over what is just the regular dosage for even one person, because there's people getting multiple doses out there.
Yeah. So let's think about the implications that has in at Rutgers. So you have an exorbitant amount of prescriptions being written. You have clear access then to drugs. And unfortunately, we see that the opiate use is up 12%, and students come to the Rutgers campus before they get here in college. They come with an addiction problem. So how does the recovery housing program fit in? I know you have 15 students from the time of the article, 15 students enrolled in the recovery housing program.
35 in New Brunswick and 3 in Rutgers Newark.
Oh, okay. So it has gotten exponentially bigger since the last time I read the article.
One of the things is I've gotten used to being misquoted in newspapers and magazines, okay. And so I just deal with it.
I am the messenger, so we can blame other Rutgers affiliations for that will remain nameless right now, but were mentioned earlier, unfortunately, in the show. So 35 in New Brunswick, 3 in the Newark campus. Just describe what, when you go to the, what the what the purpose of the recovery housing program is, and then how, what are some of the services that are offered there for the students? So if you're listening right now, and if you feel like, or you know someone in need of help, or if you yourself need help, then you can, you sort of know what is available to you here in the area.
Yeah, Mark, you say that you're absolutely right with the 12% statistic, though, and that's just in the last year. In the last 4 years, it's 44% in New Jersey. And that's not, so 4 years, 44% in 4 years.
So we're three and a half times the national average in, if we're up 44%, are we, or is it up 44%?
No, that's really, I mean, nationally, our numbers, our heroin, our opiates are much stronger than other states. But, I mean, the rise is everywhere. But for, and I don't know what the national figures are, but I know it's 44% in 4 years and 12% in the last year. And, the big reason is because of the prescription painkillers. And the problem is when kids come to school, you know, these pills, they get through their insurance company. But, you know, if you don't have a prescription, you're going to pay about $1 a milligram. So you're paying about $20. Let's say you have a 20 milligram habit, which for people who are using regularly is on the low end. So let's say it's $20 a day. Eventually you're not able to pay $20 a day, and so you transition to heroin. And so we've seen far more people on heroin than we've ever seen before, because heroin's much, you know, 7 to 10 bucks of heroin is about 80 or 90 bucks worth of OxyContin. And so so you have, and it really has absolutely been for a long time a white suburban and a white rural drug, because white people have far more access to medical care and insurance. But if, like I said, eventually the prescription runs out, they don't go to the doctor anymore, or they're not buying it in the hallways of their school or here on campus, and so it's a much easier transition. And so people who never would have tried heroin try heroin because they've already done that gateway move to Oxy. So I feel that OxyContin is probably the fourth most abused drug on this campus, alcohol, marijuana being one and two, Adderall being three, and Oxy being four. So
do you have a sense of in order, how does that go in reverse order then of the seriousness of the drug, or do you think that there's one of those four that is maybe more more dangerous than anything else, or they all present equal dangers?
So I lump the problems really now as prescription drugs. Like a lot of the work I'm doing in my career, both on the treatment level and on the policy level, is about prescription drugs. And this is completely different than what it was when I got into the field.
Well, you know, we're going to take a quick break real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about your career here at Rutgers as a counselor and transition. You're listening to 90.3 The Core. I'm here with Frank Greenagle. Thanks for listening.